658, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation versus the Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Franklin.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the question in this case is whether the Federal Environmental Protection Agency has the legal authority to override by fiat a discretionary determination that Congress expressly directed be made instead by the state of Alaska, which Congress trusted to exercise its own independent judgment according to local priorities and local conditions. We submit that the answer to that question is no. When Congress wanted to give EPA the authority to under the Clean Air Act to review and approve the substance of individual state determinations of the best available control technology, or BACT, Congress said so expressly. It gave EPA no such role in the circumstances of this case.
Well, do you think that the statute allows EPA to at least say, Alaska, you didn't go through the proper analysis here? You didn't consider, as contemplated by the statute, some of the costs and concerns that would enable a state to say, fine, you go ahead with less than the ultimate equipment. Now, can EPA under the statute say, Alaska, you just didn't follow the required procedures?
EPA can say, yes, Alaska, you did not consider the statutory factors, but that is not the contention that's being made in this
case.
Well,
isn't that an element here, in fact? Wasn't that part of EPA's concern? Is it true that the owner of the mine wouldn't even furnish certain financial information to enable the state to make that analysis?
2 points, Your Honor. The contention that's being made here is not that Alaska failed to consider the factors that Congress set forth. The contention is that they didn't do it in the way that EPA might have done it if EPA were the permitting authority.
That's a pretty fine line. I mean, I'm really surprised by your concession. I would have thought a much more rational interpretation of the statute is that, yes, the state has certain obligations under the statute to consider the factors, but if they were not considered, the person who would bring them to account for not considering them is initially the state courts and then on certiorari to this court. I thought your position was that this is none of EPA's business.
It is
that this discretionary determination is given to the states, and when the states are reviewed, they should be reviewed in court.
That is our position, Your
Honor.
Well,
why isn't it for the hypothetical that Justice O'Connor gives, as well as for everything else?
I think that the line is whether the requirements of the statute were followed or not. In this case, Alaska has done precisely that.
No, but assuming they weren't followed, is your position that when they are not followed, EPA can call them to account?
EPA has the authority to enforce the requirements and prohibitions of the Act, but we believe that authority should be narrowly circumscribed to the bounds that Congress set for the EPA.
Well, let me intervene and suggest this. Could you have answered Justice O'Connor's question this way? Oh, yes, the EPA can complain and make its case that the state did not exercise its discretion the right way, but it can't do so by just issuing an order. It has to go through the judicial review process. Would that answer fit your case, or am I misstating the theory?
No, you're not, Your Honor. The question in this case is not whether the claims that EPA raises here will be subject to review. The question is how, when, and in what manner.
Okay, now, could the EPA have gone to federal court and say, oh, well, this discretion was exercised in good faith and so forth, but it was wrong. It didn't comply with the statute. Could it go to federal court?
If its contention is it didn't comply with the express terms of the statute.
In this case,
no.
O'Connor said it didn't give – oh, it cannot go to federal court.
Not in this case, Your Honor. It could under the state review procedure, and I think there's an open question as to whether if
– Why couldn't it? They simply proceed under 28 U.S.C. 1345.
Exactly.
Now, what they do is they say, we're now in federal court. There is a state law here. The state law happens to say that you cannot – be arbitrary.
Correct.
And so now they say, we're making the same claim identically. They were arbitrary, capricious, abuse of discretion, but it's under state law. And now, my goodness, what is this case about?
Exactly.
You say that they should have gone into the Ninth Circuit under 1345, arguing it was arbitrary, capricious under state law. And they say that they should be in the Ninth Circuit arguing that it's arbitrary and capricious under federal law, where I've never heard that there's any difference between arbitrary and capricious under state law or under federal law. It's just whether it's arbitrary and capricious.
There are two important differences, Your Honor, and I think they would have the authority. 1345 is the statute I was just about to cite, and I think they would have the authority to go into federal court under state law. Two important distinctions. First, Your Honor, the going through the state process would require that they go through, in addition to the state judicial review process, the state administrative review process. In Alaska, that would have allowed Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation a de novo administrative hearing at which they could have presented a full administrative record, additional witnesses, and they would have had the opportunity to further clarify and defend their decision. The second point, Your Honor, is that under the fiat that they have exercised here, by order, it does not accord Alaska's determination the kind of deference that it would have received under the state process. The point that we're making, Your Honor, is that the state review process is adequate to address all of
but
the
concerns. But they do go into federal court, and I do see your point. What I'm curious about is I think there are like maybe a handful of administrative law experts who might have thought there was really some kind of difference between whether you're in federal court under the state words or in federal court under the federal words when the words are identical. And there may be somebody who thinks there's a difference between what you told Justice O'Connor and what you told Justice Scalia, but I'm not one of them. I don't understand how you reconcile those things. So if we assume Congress is not an expert, why wouldn't they have just meant by this? Well, EPA, you stay out of it unless you think what they're doing is unreasonable. If what you think they're doing is unreasonable, you have the authority to come in and go to federal court if you want. That would be simple. Everybody would understand it.
If Congress had made that clear in the statute, Your Honor, we would not be here. The reason that Congress did not is that when Congress wanted to give EPA the authority to review and approve the substance of individual state back determinations, it said so expressly in Section 74.
Mr. Franklin, perhaps I misunderstood your brief, but I thought that you were making the distinction in your brief between the substance of a decision and the procedural motions. I thought you conceded that if the Alaska agency simply said, well, the company wants LONOC, so they're going to get it, and we're not going to go through any feasibility analysis. I thought your brief conceded that if that were the case, there would be access to the federal court on the part of EPA.
Yes, Your Honor, but that is not what we are here about today. What we are here about today is EPA's...
Well, why isn't it, going back to Justice O'Connor's question, when the EPA is saying, in essence, you didn't really go through the feasibility analysis because you didn't even ask for the relevant information?
To get back to that, Your Honor, what EPA is saying is that we did go through the factors, but we didn't weigh them the way EPA would. And with respect to the economic considerations, Your Honor, Alaska's followed EPA's own guidance on this, which says quite clearly that the individual circumstances and finances of a permit, an applicant, are not to be considered in the analysis. So it was not relevant whether the technology would have bankrupted this company or not. What Alaska found to be relevant and what it was its statutory prerogative to find relevant and as a matter of its own local priorities was a comparison of the costs between this applicant and other similarly situated applicants in recent decisions.
Mr. Franklin, it's not just a question of coming into federal court.
No,
it's not just a question of the agency coming into federal court the way a private citizen would and challenging the state action. It's a matter of the agency issuing an order,
exactly,
which order is presumptively valid and which would have to be deferred to by the federal court, presumably, unless the order was arbitrary or capricious.
And that is what I was...
So you'd be deciding in federal court whether it was arbitrary or capricious for EPA to find the state to have been arbitrary or capricious, a very refined determination, to put it mildly.
Yes, Your Honor, and
but,
that is...
But isn't that the problem? It isn't just a matter of getting into federal court. It's a matter of how you get into federal court.
Exactly. As I was saying before, it's not a question of whether these things will be reviewed, but how, and more specifically, whether these issues...
But
which
there's a difference because you said that the reviewing authority would be the state court. So you aren't talking about whether there would be federal court review. And I think in response to Justice Scalia now, you're saying that the root is the state court. You're agreeing with him when he said the root is the state court and this court on cert. Do you see any role for the federal courts?
Well, as Justice Breyer pointed out, it's an open question, but we believe that the federal courts, if EPA were instituting the state review procedure under Section 28 U.S.C. Section 1345, there may be federal jurisdiction because that confers original federal jurisdiction on any action brought by a federal agency. But that's a narrow, limited
but
scope.
But the action has to properly lie in order for it to be successful, and when you have on what basis would the agency be suing?
They would be suing under the state review procedure, Your Honor. That would be their option, we think. And it's an open question. It's not one that I think this court
I think they could. Suppose that the state agency decides the best available control technology is a ceiling fan that they brought up to New Orleans. From New Orleans, they bought it and brought it up to Alaska. Now, EPA looks at that and says, no, no, this is going too far. Now, what, in your opinion, is supposed to happen?
Well, in our opinion, in that situation, Your Honor, it would be subject to the APA-type review, and it would be struck down. Again, the question is not whether that kind of review of
what's the role of the federal court?
Well, if EPA is the one bringing the action, I would accept Your Honor's premise that once it has proceeded through the comment process, once it has proceeded through the administrative review process, and frankly, we think that that particular matter would end there. No state would do that because states take their responsibilities seriously to implement these statutes. If, however, there were any question that remained at the end of that process, which EPA circumvented in this case by fiat, then, and only in that event, would EPA be able to seek judicial review, but it would be an APA case. It would
I don't understand anyway, because the statute that we're looking at, Section 113A5, says that if EPA finds a state is not acting in compliance with any requirement or prohibition of the PSD program,
yes,
EPA can stop construction and issue orders. It can also bring a civil suit for injunctive or monetary relief. Suppose it just puts out an order and says, look, Alaska, you did not determine what cost would mean to the mine in terms of profitability, employment, or global competitiveness, and therefore you didn't meet the requirements of the PSD statute. And you stop any construction now on the mine expansion. That would put the onus on the mine owner or the state to go to court somewhere, wouldn't it?
It would, and that's precisely the reversal of the kind of presumption of regularity that states are entitled to in these kinds of cases.
Under 7413A5C, which is 14A of your brief toward the bottom. You say that in this case, the agency cannot invoke that section to issue an order or to go to court.
That is correct, Your Honor.
All right. You have to say that to be consistent.
Yes.
Now, if you want us to write the opinion your way, you would say under 7413A5, the EPA cannot issue an order barring construction unless, now you fill in the blank.
Unless a state has, if there is a demonstrated violation of an express statutory requirement. For example, a state has not issued a permit to begin with, or a state has not put a backed limitation into a permit. Those are the kinds.
Unless there's a violation of an express statutory requirement, but the government's going to come up and say, well, there was a violation of the statute defining backed.
But in this case, Your Honor, that is not, with respect to the EPA, that's not what they're saying. They're saying that we did go through the various factors that the BACT statute requires us to go through. In their opinion, we didn't weigh them the proper way and under the proper policies. We, in fact, disagree strongly with that. But that is a contention that is raised every day of the week under administrative procedure law. It is not a contention that the express requirements of the statute.
Your formulation is that they did not follow a requirement of the statute, and I just don't see how that gets you there.
You're making a distinction between the express requirements of the statute and the obviously implicit requirements of the statute. Certainly, it is implicit in the statute that the state's decision must be made rationally and not arbitrarily. Don't you think that that's a requirement of law?
It is certainly a requirement of law, Your Honor, but it is a background principle that derives ultimately, we think, from the Due Process Clause, not an unstated requirement of this Clean Air Act. And the important thing is, what did Congress intend for EPA
to be able to? I mean, that is because the reason I think I'm having the same trouble, Justice Scalia, is because I kind of, in my mind anyway, I tend to think of a classical definition of arbitrary capricious as sometimes involving they didn't follow what the statute told them to do. Sometimes they did what the statute told them not to do. Sometimes they didn't get the weight right. And I put all those things, and I think a lot of people do, in the same box called arbitrary and unreasonable, capricious, and you try to draw some kind of line between those things. I don't know how to do it, and I don't think many judges would.
Well, I think that judges would, Your Honor. It doesn't usually come up because a court reviewing such a procedure could find the order invalid under either basis. Either it didn't comply with the statute, it didn't comply with the APA. Here, though, Congress specifically circumscribed EPA's authority, and it did so for a good reason.
No, but the language of 113A5 doesn't really seem to be limiting. I'm over here.
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't seem to be limiting the authority of the EPA. And I'm just wondering, I'm not sure I totally follow the argument, but I'm just looking at that statutory provision. And are you saying that statutory provision does not apply even if the state acted arbitrarily and capriciously?
The statute governs how the agencies gives the agency the discretion. How the agency exercises that discretion is a separate question and one that is traditionally reviewed on a full administrative record by a court, not by EPA acting on its own fiat.
That provision gives the EPA the authority to issue certain orders.
Yes.
And is it your position that they did not have the authority to issue the order here or that the order was wrong?
That they did not have the authority because there was not a violation of the requirements of the Act, which
even
is the only
if there
basis
were a violation of the requirements of the Act, would you say that if there were a violation of the Act, would they have the authority to issue that order?
If there were a violation of the express requirements of the Act, then that's what the statute says. But it has to be read in context. It has to be read in context, particularly when Congress wanted to give EPA the authority to review and approve the substance of these determinations. It said so expressly in one narrow instance. That is not applicable here. When a state
has in advance of the permit, the fact that that Congress specified that for certain pollutions, you must, before you give any permit, go to the EPA, doesn't exclude that you could have the review after the permit issues. But I would like to ask you, you seem to be saying, well, this is just a determination. They applied the statutory factors. EPA didn't like the way they did it. There seems to be lurking in this a difference on what the statute means to this extent. EPA seems to be taking a single source approach. That is, you want a new generator, that generator has to have backed for that generator. Never mind if you tell us voluntarily you're going to put low NOx on all of them, and the result would be lowering the emissions. In other words, EPA seems to be taking a no-bubble approach to this. You go at it machine by machine,
right,
generator by generator, where you're taking the position, or Alaska's taking the position, that if you can reduce overall emissions by putting the low NOx on all six generators and in the end have cleaner air, well, then do that and forget about the SCR on one machine. That seems to be a substantive difference about whether BACT applies to the whole setup or machine generator by generator.
Yes, it is, and we believe that EPA is wrong on that, but they're wrong as a matter of policy, Your Honor. Its back statute gives the states the discretion to weigh, among other factors, environmental factors. We think that is clearly broad enough for the state to take into consideration the overall environmental effect of this.
It's either that you go at it machine source by source, new source by new source, modification by modification, or you can have the bubble concept. In Chevron, EPA was espousing the bubble concept, and this court said, EPA, that's a reasonable construction of the statute. Now EPA seems to be saying, as to this program, there is no bubble. You have to look at that machine, that generator, in isolation.
Right.
And that seems to be a basic difference on what the statute means. Not a mix it all up and is it arbitrary and capricious.
We think that, it is a difference on how it's to be implemented. Congress was very clear here. They understood that states would have different policies, that one state could choose the approach that EPA might choose, which says we are not going to consider the overall environmental impact here. Another state might view it differently, but that's what Congress wanted to have happen. When EPA issued its orders in this case.
On the facts here, I thought, now tell me if I'm right about this. When I started reading it, I was quite sympathetic to your view that it makes no sense to have more emissions coming out as a result of trying to control this one generator. Their job is to get fewer emissions, not more. But then when I read into the record a little bit, it seemed to me that the facts are that by the time this generator 17 came up, it was perfectly apparent that the company had to put some low technology, NOx technology or something, on four of the other generators anyway. So that the bottom line is that this bubble has nothing to do with this case because we're talking about one generator coming in circumstances where the other generators have to be controlled regardless. Now, am I right?
You're almost right, Your Honor, but the difference is that there were four other generators that were subject to the cap, but there were six other generators.
I know,
generators,
but then I had my law clerk go through and do the extra emissions from those other two, and it didn't really make any difference.
It does make a difference, Your Honor, because of the assumption that Alaska made, and that is that if you used SCR on MG-17, and this has never been challenged, MG-17 would be the backup generator. It would not be used. Therefore, any emission savings that you can get off those other two engines, 2 and 6, no matter how small they might be, and I think that they probably come in the neighborhood of 100 tons or so, any emission savings that you can get off 2 and 6 add to the bottom line, because the assumption that the state has made, which is a reasonable and in my view correct assumption, is that MG-17 is not going to be used if it's SCR, because SCR has enormous operating costs associated with it. Again, these were the policy determinations.
I don't see where Justice Breyer's question fits with the issue. Does the statute dictate backed on an individual generator, never mind the rest? In other words, does the Act say no bubble? And that's how EPA seems to be reading the Act, that it's not a matter of discretion, that this calls for a new source, modified source, and you just look at that new source and you don't look at the old generators at all.
You look at the new source, Your Honor, but you're allowed to consider environmental impacts in looking at it. And their EPA is wrong if that's their contention. For example, they do not require states, nor could they, to use their top-down methodology. EPA understands, and that is the nub of this case, that the back determination is not supposed to be a uniform federal standard.
What other method is there besides the top-down? I know both briefs have said it's the way it was done here. That's what EPA recommends, but it isn't inevitable. What else would they use other than top-down?
It could be bottom-up, Your Honor. They could look at each technology and eliminate the ones going up. There's a number of different ways that a state could do it. The point that's being made here, when EPA
issued... Is that, in fact, the situation that there are other ways, or is it just in theory, but they all use top-down?
Your Honor, I don't know what every state uses, but I do know that Congress made clear, and the legislative history at page 31 of the Senate report is crystal clear on this point, that each state was to have the discretion to weigh the factors in its own judgment. And Congress made clear that it would be permissible for a state to consider such things as anticipated and desired economic development, as well as the amount of the available increment that the state wished a particular source to consume.
Mr. Franklin, the difficulty that I'm having with your argument about the meaning of the statute goes back to your answer, I think, to Justice Kennedy's question a while ago. He asked you, in effect, what's the role of the statute on your theory? And you said, well, if they simply ignore one of the stated statutory factors, they say we're not going to consider this, or if there's a technical defect in the order, if the order is incomplete, that would be a circumstance in which EPA could exercise this authority. But you also said, and I assume you said correctly, that later on, that these kinds of obvious violations are going to be rare.
Yes.
That leads me back to, as I said, I guess, to Justice Kennedy's question, and that is this. It seems to me that on your view of the two statutory sections, there really isn't very much role for them to play. And I can't imagine why Congress would have enacted separate order sections if all they were meant to do is what you say. So my question is, why doesn't your explanation trivialize these two statutes to a point that is implausible?
They don't trivialize it, Your Honor. There are numerous federal requirements that if a state does not meet those express statutory requirements, then EPA can step in. There are ambient air quality standards.
And EPA could do the same thing by following the state review process, couldn't it?
It could
go in and say, look, they forgot X. They refused to apply Y.
But if its contention is one that the statute gives the discretion, but it was simply not exercised in the proper way that we would have exercised it, that is not a contention that Congress wanted EPA to be able to resolve.
Well, but I mean, that's the question. I mean, the difficulty I'm having is that if it is unlikely that Congress would have provided this entire separate track simply to deal with the problems that you say the track is meant to deal with, then it is not so implausible at all that Congress would have intended the statute to be applied as it has been applied here.
I think it is implausible because Congress made clear that the EPA's authority was circumscribed to enforcing the statutory requirements, and those requirements were met in this case. If I might reserve the balance of my time.
Very well, Mr. Franklin. Mr. Hunger, we'll hear from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, petitioner's fundamental contention is that once a state issues a determination of best available control technology so labeled, no matter how arbitrary, factually unsupported, or unreasoned it may be, the federal government has no enforcement authority under the Act to take actions to stop the invalid permit from taking effect. Nothing in the text, structure, or history of the Act supports the implausible contention that Congress intended to immunize arbitrary, unreasoned state decision-making from federal enforcement review.
I don't think he is arguing. I mean, my impression of their argument was, yes, you can review that. What you have to go is through the state procedure. And then after you go through the state procedures, in fact, you can go into a federal court and have them apply the state review procedure if you want.
Yes,
I think that's what their argument was, or at least one of their arguments.
But, Your Honor, Congress enacted a federal regulatory scheme.
That's
and
a different
federal
thing. Maybe yours
scheme.
Is better, but you can't say they're leaving it without review. So I just wanted to
review only under state law, Your Honor. And our point is that Congress has enacted a comprehensive federal regulatory scheme and authorized EPA to serve as a backstop to ensure compliance with all of the requirements of the Act, or this portion.
That is exactly the point at issue, it seems to me. Why is it irrational to envision a scheme such as the petitioners here propose, which is, look, Congress set certain absolute requirements. Ambient air quality, you know, shall be this. But as long as those requirements are met, below that, we also want each state, each emission source in a state, to be examined to see whether it is using the best available technology. But what constitutes the best available technology under the circumstances is a very difficult question. It involves issues of the state economy as well as scientific issues. We are content
so long as each state meets the absolute standards that the statute sets forth, below that standard, we're going to let each state decide whether the best available technology under all the circumstances is being used. That seems to me a perfectly sensible and rational system.
Your Honor, the definition of best available control technology does not simply leave it to the discretion of the decision maker, the unbridled discretion, to select whatever
well,
it wants.
It imposes, let's see what it says.
Meaningful constraints, Your Honor. Maximum emissions reduction that is achievable, taking into account specified factors. A failure, for example.
But you're missing the first part of it. It doesn't say which is the best available. It says the best of means an emission limitation best on the maximum degree of reduction of each pollutant subject to regulation under this chapter, blah, 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 which the permitting authority on a case-by-case basis, taking into account these various methods, determines to be the BACT. I mean, there it is, which the permitting authority determines.
Yes, Your Honor. Two responses. Number one, the United States Code is filled with examples of instances in which Congress defines the initial decision maker for a particular question, but that is not generally taken to mean a delegation of absolute, unreviewable discretion. Number two, particularly when, as here, the statute imposes constraints on decision makers.
They're not saying that the discretion is unreviewable. They're just saying it's reviewable in a different manner than you think it is.
They're saying that it's not reviewable as a matter of federal law, Your Honor, and that is what we're talking about.
Well, federal law, are you aware of any state in the United States that does not have in its law the requirement that its own agencies have to act rationally, that they can't act arbitrarily, abuse of discretion?
I don't know, Your Honor, but
I don't know of any either.
But I know there are.
So that seems to be the same standard that you argue that applies. And since there is no state that doesn't have that standard and no federal government that doesn't have it, we all have the same standard. And that's why I think the argument does boil down to which courts will apply it, the federal court as a matter of federal law or the federal court as a matter of state law.
Well, number one, I believe various states have standing requirements that may be more restrictive than those applicable under federal law. Number two, the question is not merely which court will apply it, but whether the comprehensive administrative authority conferred on EPA to issue orders, and not just the administrative orders at issue here, but also the possibility of the administrative sanctions proceeding, which is separately provided by Congress in subsection D of 7413, under petitioner's interpretation. None of that would apply as long as there's some element of discretion in the state's decision, and it's simply not correct to say that BACT is the only area in which the states enjoy some range of judgment or in which there may be factual
some range
dispute.
Of judgment. This is the only provision that reads this categorically, which the permitting authority on a case-by-case basis determines.
With respect, Your Honor, that's not correct. Under 7475A3, which is the subparagraph prior to A4, which imposes the BACT requirement, 7475A3 is on, I believe it's on 13A of the appendix to the gray brief. A3 is where the requirement that permittees meet other provisions of the Act, such as the National Ambient Air Quality Standards and the increments.
Tell me again where
7475A3 on 13A of the Gray Brief.
13A.
Yes.
Four, right?
Four is the BACT requirement. Three is the National Ambient Air Quality Standards, other standards of performance, the increments, and so forth, all of the other requirements that petitioner concedes EPA should be able to enforce. But if you turn, and that A3 in turn references 7410J. And 7410J, which is on page 5A of the appendix, says that the permit applicant must demonstrate to the satisfaction of the permitting agency that all of these requirements have been met. So under petitioner's interpretation, EPA's authority to enforce all of the requirements of the Prevention of Significant Deterioration program would be eviscerated to the extent there is discretion in those determinations, and there is necessarily discretion. All of those other determinations require modeling, and to do modeling, you have to determine what the inputs to the model are, and you have to determine what the boundaries of the ambient air area are. And if EPA cannot review any of those discretionary decisions, it has essentially no authority to do anything under this Act except to require that permitting authorities mouth the words of the statutory definition, and that's it. And if that's all...
But could we get specific in this case, looking at the Clean Air Act provision, 169, paren 3, which the permitting authority on a case-by-case basis determines is achievable after considering economic impacts and other costs. Now, EPA says, what's wrong? Alaska did make a determination, did it not?
Alaska made a determination, but it did not determine best available control technology within the constraints of the statute. And the easiest...
Well, how so? Looking at the statute, what provision did they fail to comply with?
Well, they didn't determine the maximum degree that is achievable, taking into account these factors, because the only basis for the rejection of the best technology, selective catalytic reduction, was their reliance on economic impacts, and specifically what they said was the foremost consideration for their rejection of SCR, according to the state, this is at page 208 of the Joint Appendix, was the impact of the cost of SCR on the competitiveness of the mine. What's wrong with that, Your Honor, is that on the previous page, on page 207 of the Joint Appendix, the state admits that because Cominco refused to provide the financial information, they had no basis for making a judgment. That's judgment.
Let me just ask you a technical point. Suppose at the end of the day, and I'm not sure this is what we would do or that I would favor, but suppose at the end of the day we agree EPA had authority to issue a stop order and that it was proper, could Alaska then go back and say, well, okay, we're going to run through this drill once more and do consideration of costs, and they're now going to allow low NOXs instead based on that. Now, can they do that? Is that all right?
On an appropriate record, absolutely they could do that, and EPA made it clear.
So this wouldn't be the end of the day.
That's correct. The state has discretion, but that discretion is not unlimited, and that is the point that EPA...
Can you tell me, Mr. Hunger, whether or not, as a matter of past practice, the EPA has intervened in any state administrative review proceedings in state courts?
In state court, no, I don't believe so.
All right. Has it gone to federal court under, was it 1345, United States District?
I don't believe so. It's an unsettled question, I think, whether 1345 would authorize EPA to...
So the EPA has been consistent in saying that it is not in any case like this or with parallels to this gone through an administrative review process. It's simply issued a stop order?
That's correct. The EPA has consistently maintained and has announced this interpretation in a variety of administrative documents, including through notice in the course of notice and comment rulemakings and in the very orders in this case. EPA has consistently taken the position for 20 years at least that it has authority under these statutes, 7477 and 7413A5, to do exactly what it did in this case.
Doesn't surprise me, but you mentioned on an appropriate record. That is one of the things that makes me uneasy about the resolution that you propose. When this thing comes to a federal court of appeals, which is not a fact-finding court, it comes on the basis of nothing except EPA's order. We do not know the record before the administrative agency on the basis of which the EPA acted. Now, if you had gone through the state administrative procedure, that record would have been examined. The action in question would have been the action of the state agency, and you would examine the record before the state agency. But the administrative action we're reviewing here is not the state administrative action. It's your administrative action, and the only relevant record is the record before the EPA. And as I said before, the Court of Appeals ends up determining whether it was arbitrary and capricious for the EPA to determine that the state agency was arbitrary or capricious. Well, you combine those two weird factors, and I'm just dubious that this is the kind of review that Congress intended.
Taking the last part of your question first, Your Honor, there's nothing particularly strange about an appellate court reviewing a prior determination of whether an agency decision was arbitrary and capricious. Courts do that all the time.
Under Squared.
The APA, when a district court, no, if a, a district court determines whether a whether the an agency decision was arbitrary and capricious, the Court of Appeals, to the extent there are discretionary issues there, would review deferentially. But really, as a general matter, it's going to boil down to a question of law, which is, I think, the case here, which is, was it or was it not arbitrary and capricious for the state of Alaska to do what it did here? Fundamentally, that is a question of law upon review of the EPA's determination.
It's a question of judgment and whose judgment gets some weight. In respect to that, what I'd really suddenly stirred up again here, suppose we reach the second question. Suppose we reach the question of whether Alaska did, in fact, do something that was pretty unreasonable. And suppose I accept your argument that this was totally unreasonable to say that they didn't have to put in this special technology because of cost when Alaska didn't even know what the cost was. You say, yeah, that's about like the fan. That's close to the ceiling fan. That's what you're arguing. But then they've made another argument. And the other argument is bothering me a lot more. And that is that the EPA has taken the position that you have to put this extra special converter or whatever on number 17, even if the consequence of that, because of the interaction of the regs and their desires with number 2 and number 6, is more pollution. Now, that does bother me, because it seems to me a state agency that's trying to get a result that is less polluting is not acting arbitrarily and capriciously, except in rather unusual circumstances. Now, what do I do with that argument? Does that mean if I accept everything you say, but that worries me, I should send it back for another determination of whether this really is arbitrary and capricious? What should I do with that argument?
Your Honor, the state agency did not justify its final permit decision on that rationale. The state is now arguing in its briefs in this court.
That's one point. I've got that point. That's a kind of technical point in my mind. In other words, Alaska might really be polluting more, but because of this sort of which paper they wrote which in, we should just accept it. Now, I got that argument, but is there any other?
But it's more than that, Your Honor. The state agency expressly rejected that analysis, refused to conduct that analysis, refused to base its permit decision on that approach because it agreed it was contrary to the requirements of the Act. That's at page 199 of the Joint Appendix. The state agency said, we agree. That's not an appropriate way in which to analyze the BACT question. That's consistent with EPA's regulations in answer to Justice Ginsburg.
I asked that question before, and it is a question of interpretation of the text of this statute. I thought that EPA was taking an anti-bubble approach, that it said you want to have generator 17, we look at generator 17, and that's what the statute means by new source. I thought you were taking that view, but maybe you're not.
Your Honor, Chevron itself actually discusses this, as you suggested, but Chevron recognizes that EPA has applied the bubble concept or not differently. The bubble concept applies at the initial stage in determining whether a modification has to go through the prevention of significant deterioration analysis. But once it is determined that the total emissions are going to increase, so that the modification does have to go through that analysis, it is then the bubble concept no longer applies and the analysis is done on an individual basis. That's set forth in EPA regulations promulgated through notice and comment rulemaking.
That's what I thought. So it isn't a question of just loose, arbitrary, and capricious. EPA is taking the position that you look at generator 17 because you've already made the determination that adding a generator, modifying another one, is going to add to the pollution.
As a matter of law, what EPA has determined in exercising in its rulemaking authority is that the statute requires that once it's determined that the BACT analysis must be made, it must be made on an individual unit basis, which is exactly what the state ultimately did here. The state conceded that is correct, as EPA's regulations state. Only in its briefs in this court is the state now trying to back away from that.
Mr. Hunger, can I ask you, going back to Justice Scalia's question earlier, is there a significant difference in the record before us in this proceeding than what the record would contain if they'd followed the route of applying a review of the Alaska order through the state system?
We don't believe so, Your Honor. The EPA gave the state ample authority and COMINCO ample opportunity to place in the record whatever materials they wanted.
That was my impression. The record really was the same no matter which way you went.
The Ninth Circuit, when this case was in the Court of Appeals, issued an order directing the preparation of a record and asking the parties to address whether the record was complete or not. COMINCO and the state said the record was sufficiently complete. The only things that the state identified.
Did they put in the whole state record?
I don't know that the whole the administrative record fills a box. It contains internal ADEC communications, memoranda, analysis, the COMINCO applications. It's quite
but
detailed.
But I take it your answer is they can put in the entire state record to go before the Court of Appeals.
Absolutely.
Is that the answer?
Okay. And again, under Overton Park and under this case's precedence, if the EPA record is incomplete for some reason, the court can remand it to the agency for further. To complete the record, but that doesn't suggest that EPA doesn't have the authority to act. It merely suggests that EPA needs to exercise that authority in a procedurally correct manner.
It goes back to a question that has now dropped out of the case entirely, it seems. But in the Ninth Circuit, I think EPA was arguing this is not a final order. You have to wait until we go into court, and the court that we would go into is a district court where a full record could be developed. I take it you have now abandoned that argument, seen the error of your ways, and now you accept that this is final. What led you to change?
Upon further consideration of this court's more recent precedents in the area of finality, the Whitman case and Bennett against Speer, and given the particular circumstances of this case where the agency, where EPA was not simply issuing an order to someone saying you're violating pre-existing requirements of the Act, but was in fact changing the status quo and stating that a permit that had been issued by the state that allowed construction could not take effect. In those circumstances, we concluded that this court's precedents regarding final orders are satisfied and that this is indeed a final order because it imposes legal obligations, new legal obligations on COMINCO.
Mr. Hunger, you've just told us that the reviewing court can have the full state record before it when it makes its determination. What about EPA when it makes its determination, when it issues its order? What does it have in front of it? Well, it doesn't have to have anything, does it?
Well, it has to have evidence sufficient to make a finding that the state is not complying with the requirements of the Act, Your Honor. 74-1385
says it doesn't have to do that on the basis of the record presented to the agency, does it?
Well,
it's
difficult.
Did it in this case? Is that what it did? Did it review the agency record here?
Well, in this case, although they had extensive record materials before them, the flaw in the state's decision-making is apparent on the face of the state's own decision. As I said before, pages 207 and 208 of the Joint Appendix reveal that the state admits it doesn't have factual support for what it views as the foremost consideration justifying its decision. But if EPA issued an order under this Act without the record materials in front of it, and had therefore had no basis for issuing an order, a Court of Appeals could set it aside.
Can you tell me, I want to be very clear on what I didn't hear in answer to my question. What I was concerned about, and I understand your legal arguments, but I was concerned about their claim that if you win this case, what it means is more expensive technology goes on to number 17. They run number 17 less. They run 2 and 6 more. And the net result in Alaska is more pollution. Now, you haven't said, I haven't heard you say, no, that's wrong. What you have said is we shouldn't reach it. They didn't make the claim in the right place with the right words. And I want to give you a chance to say, no, that's wrong, if it is wrong.
I think it is wrong, Your Honor. It is theoretically possible that if they installed this expensive generator and spent millions of dollars on it and never once turned it on, and they ran all of their other generators 100% of the time without ever stopping them, it is theoretically possible that there could be slightly more pollution. However, that is highly implausible, number one. And number two, there is no finding by the state that that is, in fact, what would happen. This is merely argument in their appellate briefs. And what is clear on the record is that if the state had adopted SCR as backed, the total cap on emissions allowable by this facility would be hundreds of tons lower than the cap that was imposed by the state. That's undisputed and perfectly clear that SCR would result in a total emissions cap far lower than the one that the state wanted to impose. And so the state's argument, unsupported by any findings, is that is the sheer speculation that Cominco would spend millions of dollars to install a generator that it would never use. We submit that's highly improbable.
Do I understand you to say that they would be forced, I take it you're implicitly you're saying, they'd be forced to use this generator because the use of this generator would be the only way that they, in fact, could comply with the cap?
No, Your Honor. If they installed this generator and if selective catalytic reduction were deemed to be required, there's a total emissions cap of 3,878 tons in the state's permit.
For what? All seven, okay.
And that includes MG-17 under using the low NOx. Under low NOx, MG-17 outputs 531 tons if it's used throughout the year. 531 tons. Under SCR, it would put out only a tenth of that at full capacity. So the total cap under BACT would be hundreds of tons lower, slightly less than 3,500 tons.
The cap wouldn't be lower. The total emissions would be lower.
The total emissions cap would be lower. The company is free to choose how to meet the cap, which machines to operate at what times, as long as it doesn't exceed that cap. But the cap is determined by adding to the pre-existing cap total for the other six generators the additional amount that is deemed permissible for the new generator.
So the answer is it would probably, most probably, use the new generator.
Absolutely.
Theoretically, it wouldn't have to.
Correct. Your Honor, we submit that Congress clearly intended EPA to exercise meaningful enforcement authority in the Prevention of Significant Deterioration Program. Indeed, it specifically authorized in that very context EPA to issue the types of orders at issue here. We therefore ask that the judgment of the Court of Appeals be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Hunger. Mr. Franklin, you have 3 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. Responding to Justice O'Connor's colloquy with counsel as to whether EPA could simply remand the case and then there might be a back and forth that could take...
I didn't ask if it was... could remand it. I asked whether it would be open to the state to go through the drill that EPA said it didn't do before and that the state said it didn't have the information to enable it.
And that is precisely the problem in our view, because EPA, if the court upholds its authority in this case, can act by fiat at any time it wants on the basis of any information that it deems relevant, even after a permit has gone through the entire state process, even after it has become final under state law, and even after the source may have invested millions of dollars in the technology, then EPA could step in. What we are saying here, and Justice Breyer, we don't care which court.
There are courts with doctrines that would not allow such inequitable conduct. I mean, you brought up it could be years and years later, any time, 17 years later, EPA could wake up. The answer to that was that no court would give an ear to EPA having just slept on the situation.
With respect, Your Honor, EPA's enforcement authority in this case is mandatory. Under Section 167, they shall take appropriate measures to stop construction. Therefore, if the court upholds their authority in this case, they have to exercise it at any point. And Justice Breyer, we don't care which court conducts the review. We care that a court does, and not EPA acting at any time by fiat according to any information that it may have on the basis of what it thinks may or may not be reasonable or unreasonable. The point of the matter is that the state procedures are fully adequate to address any concerns that EPA has raised here. And it's injecting itself into the process, disrupting the orderly process. And Justice Stevens, the record would be different, and it would be different because Alaska law allows, when a party has properly objected, for a de novo administrative hearing at which the agency is allowed to present additional evidence, witnesses, and further refine and clarify its decision. If there was any legitimate concern as to whether the state's decision was as clear as it should have been, that is the manner in which it should have been resolved, through the administrative process. And we are confident that it would have been resolved there, Justice O'Connor. That's where the back and forth would have occurred, not in the manner of here, where we're now 4 years later and we still don't have a decision as to what technology this company can use. And finally, Your Honors, the point of the matter is there's no legitimate dispute here that the result of Alaska's decision is cleaner air, and that cannot be unreasonable.
Thank you, Mr. Franklin. The case is submitted.